Interview with Josie Douglas Smith, or Josie Smith. And it's 12-4-89, Michigan State University. The interview is being done in the Counseling Center. And if you would begin by giving me your name, your age, and your address, and what you're studying.
Okay. My name is Josie Douglas Smith, and I'm studying drama and French. Hopefully I'm going to major in drama next year. And I live in London at flat B, 22 Mornington Avenue, London W14. And I'm 19 years old. I'll be 20 in March.
Okay, thank you. If you could just give me a description of where you live in London, what the street looks like, what the neighborhood is like, what the ethnic breakdown of your neighborhood is.
Well, some of that I don't know because I haven't lived there before. It's a friend's flat, and I've spent a lot of time there, but I'm moving in when I get back. So it was originally a house. It's like a four-story house, a townhouse, so it's semi-detached, and her flat is on the first floor, and it's like a two-bedroom flat. It's right off a main road, but yet it's kind of down from the main road, so it's really quiet. And what kind of people live there, I really couldn't tell you at this stage.
Could you tell me describe the neighborhood that you grew up in with your family?
Yeah, we live, my parents live near Liverpool, and we lived in a sort of town about 20 miles away from Liverpool, on the coast. We live about a mile away from the beach. The neighborhood is very middle class, very small streets with nice big houses on, very safe, very protected, no black people, no Jewish people, no, just all white, English, middle class people. And I lived there until I was 15.
Was this in the city?
No, it's
not.
No, the city's 20 miles away, and then it's a suburb, but it's a small town within itself. It's, you know, it's not like a few houses out of the city. It's definitely a town. I can't remember what the population is, though.
Did you live near the center of town, of that little community, or did you live on the outskirts of it? Do you know what I mean? Where was your house in connection?
Well, in the center, but it's hard to say because, for instance, like around here, it's not like there's a town and then you go for miles and there's nothing between there and the next town. It's like each town runs into the next. So wherever you are, really, you're in the center of it. But we were near kind of, if I say, for instance, that there was a main street, which we called the village, with shops on, and I lived probably a mile away from there. So, yes, it was the center.
Now, you said you lived a mile from the beach?
Yeah.
How often would you go down to the beach? Would you go swimming there in
the
summer?
No, definitely not. For one, the weather's never really nice enough. For two, it's not really the sea, it's the estuary of the river. It's full of oil, the sand is brown, almost black. People don't swim there, and the tide never comes up. It's always a mile away from the beach, so we used to go walking there, and there's pine woods there, which are nice, but it's not the kind of place where you'd sit on the beach for the day.
So do you have good memories, childhood memories of roaming around in that area?
Yeah, and plus it was always like all my friends lived so near, and we would cycle around to each other's houses all the time. And
can you describe some of those childhood adventures that you had, in particular?
Yeah, we used to, there was... Now, where I live, mostly there's a lot of new houses been built, but when I was younger, there was quite a few open fields, and we used to call them the heather fields, so just completely covered with heather, and we used to go down there and make ourselves little houses, and...
Houses out of what?
Just within the bushes. You know, the bushes were quite high, and obviously we were tiny, and we used to go down there and take picnics, which our mothers would give us, and play little games, pretend we were so-and-so, and make our own little lives in these houses. We'd sit there, and then as we got older, we'd go down there and sneak away to have a cigarette there when our parents didn't know we smoked and stuff.
Is that as bad as it got, cigarettes?
At the time, yes. Yeah.
People wouldn't sneak off and drink, the guys?
Well, No, because in a way, like, the first drink I had was with my parents. Like, they offered me, like, wine with meals and things since I was about 13 years old. So it wasn't like I ever felt I had to sneak off and have a drink.
So you grew up learning how to handle alcohol.
Yeah, but then everyone does in England. It's very different to here, yeah. I feel. And different to other countries I've spent time in as well.
You know, something I've noticed, you say, and Jacinta said the same thing, you say it's very different to this or to that.
Yeah.
We say over here it is very different then.
Yeah, I've noticed that.
Yeah. Can you talk a little bit more about what it meant to grow up in that area in terms of specific experiences, the school that you went to?
I went to an all-girls day school.
From when to when?
I was at the same school from the age of 4. I started school when I was 4. My mother didn't want me around the house anymore. Until I was 15. Obviously, there was like a junior apartment, and then when I was 10, I moved to the senior department. But it was just down the road, and it's the same school. So I was always with the same people from the age of 4. And my best friend, who's still my best friend now, she lives 2 houses down from me. We were at school together, and it was... There was never, like, anything that ever threatened me. It was always so safe, and my parents were there, and my friends were there, and, you know, it was... And now, like, when you have to do things and think for things all by yourself, it was just so set, and you did this and you did that, and... But I never thought any... I didn't know any different then. That was my life. I don't know, some... And also, we never saw... The bad parts. For instance, Liverpool, there's some really nasty areas to live in. We never saw that. And even in the part where I live, which is called Formby, there's like council estates, etc. But I don't know, in a way I feel that we should have sort of been more aware of this. But as we went to private school and, you know, it was just
so
also...
So when you look back, do you feel that you had an overly sheltered young life?
Yes and no, because now I see people who are older than me that are so much more naive that I think, well, it can't have been that sheltered. And also, it's like some people say to me that I'm still naive in that I never think about how some people live. But it's like if I've never... Do you know what I mean? I always think if I've never had to think about it, then probably I never will have to. Not like I'm being really callous or anything, but within my own life... I'll never have to know what it's like. Do you know what I mean?
You don't feel that you must experience everything in order to reject it.
Well, yeah, a lot of things, yes. But there's a certain standard where you begin, and I'd experience everything that I could achieve above that standard and then maybe reject it. But why go below the standard where you start at? That's sort of, it's not really beneficial to yourself.
Well, you said that there were some nasty areas of town. Describe what you mean by that.
Well, not nasty, for instance, compared to things I've seen since I've been here, like compared to things I've seen in New York, because there aren't any homeless where I live, because everyone who can't afford a house has a council house, which is like the government provides them with a house.
Pays for a room.
Yeah. Well, I believe they have to pay themselves, but it's a minimal rent. It's practically nothing. I mean, they're not... Now, I think they're not bad parts of town. In fact, now I'm thinking about it. But at the time, it was like where the other kids lived. Do you know what I mean? That's how it always struck me.
So who were the other kids?
Just the children who didn't hang around with us.
And they were?
People who didn't go to our school. It's a very... particularly in the town where I live, and particularly in London as well, is such a class-structured society, and you are not encouraged to mix outside of what you're used to or what you've
When
been.
You say not encouraged, what form did that take? Did this take the form, for example, of your father saying to you, don't go to a certain part of town. I don't want
but
you
then,
hanging around with so-and-so.
No, it wasn't like he had to set the limits because it's kind of... I wouldn't have gone there because I had no friends there, because I went to... I wouldn't have met them at school, and because... Do you know what I mean? I just would never have met them. I wouldn't have had friends in that area, not because I would have chosen them myself.
But when you think back and you think of all the conversations that you overheard with your parents and in homes of your friends, of your girlfriends, what remarks did they make about the other, about the caste system, about the other groups who lived in other parts of town? Were they very subtle in their commentary, or
it's not like,
is it like here where you can have an American family calling someone, you know, he's a dirty nigger, and you know, he's stupid, and I mean really harsh, bitter?
No, it's not like that. It's like no one really mentioned it ever, but if they did, it was kind of jokingly. Like my mother would kind of jokingly call them the riffraff or whatever, but it's not, she didn't really think that in herself, but that yet she wouldn't befriend someone there because it wasn't, you didn't do that.
I understand.
But it wasn't like she would personally, or anyone would personally look down on one other person, as people do here with blacks, for instance.
But are there, that is because your parents are, would you call them middle class?
Yeah.
What is, can you talk a little bit about what your father does or did, and your mother?
My father is the director of a department store, like, I don't know, like Macy's or something. There's like 21 department stores in the country, and he's in charge of the one in Liverpool. And my mother went to the same college as me, in fact, and in those days it was teacher training. She's a qualified teacher, and she teaches now about two or three mornings a week. She teaches remedial readers and dyslexic children from age about four to eight.
Now, Jacinta mentioned that a lot of people in Liverpool trace their ancestry back to Ireland, as Liverpool was a stopping-off place for America, but some people stayed instead of going on.
Yeah, it's true.
What is your background?
Well, my parents aren't from Liverpool, so I can't. So I have no Irish in me. My mother's from Yorkshire, and she always lived there until she met my father. My father did live in Liverpool for a while, in fact, when he was younger. But he's not from Liverpool. He's from the south of England, and he spent most of his childhood in Southampton.
Do you have any relatives in this country?
No, I wish I did. No, none at all. But my family is totally English. They all live in England, and there's nothing exciting about us at all.
But if you go back a few generations, either on your mother's side or your father's side,
English all the way.
They all stuck to England, eh?
Yeah. I don't even have, like, any foreign in-laws or anything.
Yeah. If you went back far enough, eventually you would find something.
Oh, I'm sure, yeah. Yeah, I'd like to do that one day, but I've never looked into it yet.
Well, it sounds like you had a normal, healthy, happy upbringing.
Yep. I'd say so.
Did you do well in school? Can you talk about how well you did do and what your reaction was to the academic program in high school, or the equivalent of, I don't know what you call high school in England?
Well, I was at this one school which I mentioned before, the old girls' day school, till I was 15, and I did really well there. And then it was just before, like, we have O-levels and A-levels, which are our big exams. And O-levels you take when you're 16, generally, and A-levels you take when you're 18. Or a lot of people don't take A-levels at all, they leave school at 16. And up until O-levels, which I did when I was 15, just because I started school a year early and I never stayed back a year, I used to do really well, and I was really interested. I used to study hard, and working was like a hobby. Studying was a hobby for me. And then it was just before my O-levels, I started going out in the evenings and started doing this, started doing that, and I just...
With young men, young guys?
Yes, and with groups of... More with just big groups of friends. And I just lost interest. I still don't know what happened. It was like in a day, I just stopped being interested in studying. And then I did okay in my O-levels, but not nearly as well as I was expected to. And
now,
then,
how long before your O-levels did you start this gallivanting around?
Literally about 3 weeks. I mean, it was really stupid. And then I went. My parents didn't want me to stay at that school because, A, it was just going downhill as a school. They had a bad headmistress and everything. And, B, because I'd been there since I was four, and they wanted me to have a few more interests. And it was really an academic school. There was not, they didn't offer you anything else like sports or drama or anything. And so they sent me to an all-boys boarding school that took girls in the sixth form for the last 2 years, that is.
That's quite a shift.
Yeah, so there was like 800 boys and 70 girls there. And then I totally lost interest in my studies. And I got through my A-levels, but I didn't do as well as I was expected to at all.
Now, and then, I can guess why, but why?
Well,
you had a ratio of boys to girls, which must have been something like 10 or 15 to 1, practically.
Yeah.
That couldn't have been, that must have been appealing to you on some level.
Yeah, and it wasn't just that, but it's just, then because obviously it was boarding school, there were people from all over the country. So then even in the holidays, I used to spend every holiday in London because when you were 15, it was the place to be and everything happened there and being in Liverpool was so boring. And so I used to spend every holiday in London. And I never did any studying at all. And then my last year there, I got into this one serious relationship with this guy, and so just practically gave up.
Did you learn anything from the relationship?
Yeah, a lot. It's only just finished, in fact, before I came here. It lasted 3 years, but yeah, I did.
No, that's too tender a subject to talk about.
No, it's not, but it was a very complicated... He was a drug addict, and he was in and out of rehab, and... So I learned a lot, yeah, but...
Well, that's interesting, because you have described yourself up to now as a person who mixed with the right people, who came from the right background, who did the right things, going to this all-girls school. Your mother and father had it together, were hard workers and so forth. And suddenly you become interested in a person who, at one level, was the total opposite of that. If he was into drugs and things,
well,
why the attraction?
Well, no, it's not, because this is the crazy thing about this stupid class system in England. It's like, although he was this, and he wasn't when I first met him, obviously, but although he was this, to my parents, he was still the right person because he went to the right school and his parents came from the right background. Do you know what I mean? So although he was so bad, it's better than me seeing someone who lives, you know, around the corner on the council estate who's working his way through technical college or something.
Who may not have been afflicted with all those problems.
Right. That's what's so stupid about it.
So, have you detected class distinctions of that kind in this country?
No. I do notice that, for instance, in the bars, it's always the same kind of people who stick together. And I notice more than a class is just blacks and whites. Even, for instance, in the dining room in McDonald Hall, the black people sit there and the white people sit there, which for me is really strange because I never saw black people in that way. Like, the first time I met black people to talk to was when I went away to this boarding school, and they were all like the princes of Nigeria and that kind of thing. So they were the right people as well, and it didn't matter that they were black because they were the right people. See what I mean? So a lot of my best friends were black, and then I come here and it's like I feel I shouldn't be talking to them. I really hate that. I really hate racism.
Well, did you talk to them?
What, black people here? Oh, I would do, yeah. But you don't meet them.
Yeah. You have to have something in common.
I have met a few because there's this one black girl from my college in England that came over and she's introduced me to some of her friends here. But it's strange how here, because in England there's so few black people in our college that all her friends are white. Here, all her friends are black, every single one of them.
Strange.
And she, in a way, she was the only black girl who came over with us. And she has met so many more people than I would think most of us have because she's black. You know, and all the black people come to her and they're like, but then they wouldn't think of talking to any of us. That's really weird. I don't understand how that happens at all.
Yeah, it is strange. We have our own breed of discrimination in this country. And the English have theirs.
But it was really the first thing I noticed about the people here when I got here. It's just, racism just doesn't occur in England. I mean, it does, but only by very small, particularly biased communities.
In other words, you will accept anybody of any color as long as he comes from your level.
Well, no, now I've been at college, etc. I mean, you learn that, like, your level is not always right, and there's a lot of assholes on your level. You know, you become more sort of, you become to judge people yourself rather than to accept what your parents say about people. So now I'm like, I'll talk to anyone, and then I decide whether I want to or not after I have done.
Well, when you came here initially, you must have had, or when you left the girls' school and you went to the, what was it, in effect,
Rugby
a boarding school. That must have been a big change, not simply because there were very few girls there, but academically, was it much more demanding?
Yeah, definitely. And also because all the masters at this school were like something out of the Second World War.
Mr. Chips.
Yeah, that's right. Very chauvinist. And as there was three girls and, say, 20 guys in a class, they would pick on you. We would get sent back for wearing our skirts too short, for not brushing our hair properly. And so it was, we were being discriminated against in a way. So it was difficult because you had to really do well to make something of yourself.
Did you study hard there, or did you continue with your lousy study habits?
No, I didn't study. But the bad thing was, because I'd done so well in the past, I knew I could get through, and that was all that mattered then. I didn't care about doing well. It was like, if I get through, then it's okay. And I knew I could.
You said before you took your O's. What does that stand for?
O-levels.
It's O-level. O-level
is ordinary level. A-level is advanced level.
So how long were you at this new school then?
2 years. Because you do, like, for A-levels, you do a two-year course, and that's all we were allowed to be there for.
And then, after that?
Then I took a year out from everything.
What? Why?
Well, I was expelled from school at the end as well.
Why?
For smoking dope.
Oh, influence of your boyfriend.
Yeah. Well, yes, but you can't blame it on him. I mean, it's my fault if I get expelled.
Now, what? Here we have this sweet, innocent young girl who comes out of this marvelous middle-class family who's suddenly being corrupted for whatever reason. What's going on here?
It was just like, because as we were saying before, I had been so protected until I went to this school. And it was just like, I really did change. I just spent every holiday in London, and everything was so trendy, and you had to do this and you had to do that. You had to be seen here and not be seen here. And smoking dope was so trendy and everyone did it. So
you're really out there testing the waters, trying different things, joining up with the latest group that's trying this, that, and the other thing. And you're being swept along by what all your peers are doing. You're trying things out. You're experimenting.
Yeah.
Are you out of that stage, or are you just in phase two of that?
I don't know what I'm... That's a really difficult question to answer. We're probably... Do you ever stop trying new things, really?
I think some people do. I think some people stop living after they're 35.
True. I don't think...
They get in that rut.
Yeah.
If you look at your... I don't mean to use your parents as an example, but...
Yeah, my parents have stopped trying things.
All right.
I'd like to think that I wouldn't ever stop trying.
Your dad goes to work every day. Your mother does her remedial reading and instruction.
Yeah.
And they're in a pattern. They're not out gallivanting around with friends trying new things.
Yeah, that's true. Well, no, then I'm not like them yet. And I hope... I'd like to think that I'd never stop trying new things. If I had the opportunity to do anything, I'd like to do it.
So you're the type that may get married 4 times and travel around the world 12 times.
I'd like to travel around the world 12 times. I'm not sure about 4 marriages. 1 would be enough, I think, eventually.
Well, maybe you'll run different tests. That is, you'll try living with different people under different circumstances. Or is that a taboo in middle-class England?
No, I couldn't marry someone unless I'd lived with them.
Yeah. Now that's accepted here. I mean, that's just everybody assumes now. But a generation ago, this was sinful.
Yeah. It's not accepted. My parents wouldn't like me to live with someone. My grandmother would be shocked. They would accept it because my parents aren't the kind of people who say, you can't do this. You know, they say, well, do it. If it goes wrong for you, don't blame us.
Now, what was your father's and mother's reaction to all of this activity, all of this crazy living that you were, I mean, getting thrown out of school and getting in, going with some guy who took dope? Did they come down hard on you?
Well, when I got thrown out of school, they were mad. I've never seen them like that before, and I don't think I ever will do again. But it was really weird. They were so cross. And then after a day, it was just like, okay, let's not mention it again. It's all over. And that was really weird.
But they did they attempt to discuss this with you? Did they try to make you reason in some way? Did they try to get to the heart of why you did these things? Or did they just blow off steam and say,
yeah, they did. They did. But I suppose, now I look back on it, going through a tricky phase, and I was just like, whenever they discussed, because my mother at first was just hysterical, and she was like, oh my goodness, we'll have to send you to rehab, blah, blah, blah. And I was, you know, to me, their attitude was ridiculous, so I just yelled back at them. I was just like, you know, you're so naive. I've just done one stupid thing, and I was stupid enough to get thrown out for it, and of course, then I said, I'm not going to do it again, blah, 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 and that was it. They said I couldn't see my boyfriend again, though, but then they even gave up on that after a while.
Is he straightened out, or is he still
having
trouble?
No, he's not. I haven't spoken to him for a while, but he was clean for 9 months, and then he went back again.
Well, this is intriguing. Okay, well, I'm up to the point now where you have you were thrown out of school. You took a year off. Now, what did you do during that year? Did you stay home and watch television? Did you work?
No.
Did you?
I worked in. So I finished school in the July, and then I just had a normal summer holiday. Then, starting in September, I worked in one of my father's stores, the one in London, in the Christmas stationery department. And I was
as a saleswoman.
Yes, which I hated at first, and then by the time I left, I adored it. And then I went to Madrid and lived there for 6 months as an au pair. And then I came back and...
Hablo español.
Un poco, sí. And I did speak Spanish really well when I got back, but now I've forgotten it all. I stayed at home for the summer and got a job, a terrible job. I was supposed to go to Brazil with a friend for 2 months. It was all arranged. And I met this guy and wouldn't go, which now I regret so much. So I got this shitty job at home and did that all summer.
Tell me about your experience in Spain. 6 months as an au pair with a Spanish family.
Yes.
Working 12 hours a day?
Oh, no, 4 hours a day. I had to work 1 hour in the morning and 3 hours in the evening. The pay was like pocket money. I mean, I wasn't paid hardly at all, but I had such a good time. Just like, it's a totally different life out there. Just the hours you live and everything. And at first I was really unhappy because I was scared to go, but I really wanted to. And I just got on this plane. I didn't know who I was going to, couldn't speak a word of the language. I was 17 years old, and I was sitting on the plane thinking, oh, my God, what am I doing? And it was the first time, really, that I'd ever thought that I didn't maybe want to go. And then I got there, and the first week I hated it, and I wanted to go home, and I was phoning my mom, I'm coming home on the next plane. Well, with this family, a family of 5 children, one of whom was a boy who was 15 years old, a girl who was 13, a girl who was 11, a girl of 8, and a boy of 6. And I was there as a kind of English teacher come au pair. Really, I only had to deal with the 6-year-old and the 8-year-old, but I had to help the others with English a bit. They spoke really good English, luckily, Even the six-year-old spoke good English. I liked being with the children, but I hated the mother, and she hated me.
Why?
Oh, it's crazy. She was so overprotective over her children. In a way, I suppose she had to be, because, like, the father was the Attorney General of the government. So I suppose that maybe they'd had kidnap threats or something in the past. But I couldn't take them out. I was looking after them, but I couldn't take them out of her sight, which really frustrated me, because if she was going to tell me to look after them, I wanted to be able to and to do my own thing with them. And I couldn't do that. And they lived in this tiny apartment, and I couldn't take them out of it. And there were really nice parks all around. And all my other friends there, all the other English girls I knew there that were au pairs that I met at my Spanish classes, could take their children and take them to the parks and all these kind of things. And I wasn't allowed to do that, and that really frustrated me. And then this one time I took the child out. I got the mother's permission. I took the young boy out to buy some stickers for his basketball sticker book. Then I met a friend of mine, another girl, an American girl, in fact, who was an au pair. And it turned out that the child she was looking after was a friend of the child I was looking after. So obviously the two boys wanted to play together, and I sat and chatted to my friend for a while. When we got back, all hell broke loose. They thought he'd been kidnapped or something. And I was never allowed to take them out after that, and so I really hated that. But I wasn't prepared to leave the family because I was having such a good time apart from that.
You must have undergone or experienced a rather radical cultural shock, yeah, in the sense that the English male behaves one way, and then when you got to Spain, the machismo,
Yeah, Spanish men are horrible.
Yeah.
They yell at you, especially if you're blonde, because in Madrid or in most of Spain, there are no blonde people. And he would yell the most horrible things down the street. And not just like most people, like, say, builders in England would, like, whistle at you or something. But they would, once I became to understand the language and I understood what they were yelling, they would yell the crudest things at you, and just really disgusting. You know, I felt like I don't want to walk down the street alone. But then you knew you were safe because the crime rate's not that high, so...
All bark and no bite.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. But also, apart from that, just with Spain being a socialist country and they only lost a dictatorship 10 years ago, the standard of living is so low. I mean, really, the family I worked for were supposedly a very wealthy family. But they lived in this tiny... I mean, there were seven of them, and me, and a maid. And they lived in this four-bedroomed apartment. I at first, I just couldn't understand that. They did have other houses in other parts of Spain, but, you know, this was a really... It wasn't even nicely done out or anything. It was grotty. And I couldn't understand why they had a maid when they couldn't even afford a nice house. And then I realized that nearly every Spanish family has a maid, and they're usually, like, Filipino or something. And they are paid a pittance, you know, and they just come in every day and work like slaves. It's really different. And it's like there is no rich in Spain.
So that must have given you an appreciation for some of the standards in England.
Yeah, and then I come here and I realize that there's even higher standards.
Well, you don't have the extreme poverty we do.
That's true. But then... Yeah, but then I haven't seen, apart from in New York, much extreme poverty.
Go to Detroit, Chicago. If you're going to Chicago, if you want to see some extreme poverty, take a tour through the South Side.
Oh, yeah, we did go there, we did. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that is horrible. It reminded me of Liverpool, in fact.
But let's get back to another subject, which is... what your particular interests are now. Is this acting a flight from reality which will last 6 months and then you will do something else? Are you serious about this? Are you settling down, or are you, or is this phase two of Adventure 36? What's going on here?
Well, my drama course at home is not acting, so I didn't really go into it for acting, to be an actress. When I was little, I wanted to be an actress, but I think everyone goes through that, or a pop star or something. So I'm doing drama because I was told I had to go to college, which I didn't even want to do in the first place. So I thought I'd do something I enjoyed doing. And also I do now, what I'd really like to do is go into production when I'm older, which I suppose the course we do at home will help slightly towards that. But I work in the holidays. My aunt has a company that deals with, well, it's called the logistics team, and it deals with the logistics side of corporate production. And I work for her, and so I see a lot of what goes on behind the scenes, and I meet a lot of people in corporate production, which is really good. I love doing that.
So what, in 5 years, if you could do what you... If you could do what you really wanted to do, in 5 years, what would you be doing? You say production, but that covers a vast... That includes everything from the being essentially taking control on some technical level, or the creative side, which would involve the conception, the writing, or including standing in front of the camera.
I haven't quite decided yet, because I'm interested in television production. I'd really like to have, like, my own company, which I'm sure everyone shares. But what I aim to do is, at the moment, stay with my aunt's company when I leave, because really, in that kind of field, it's not what you know, but it's who you know. And so I'm making a lot of connections there. And then I'd like to go and work for a production company, which dealing with the technical side rather than the logistics side.
What production are you talking about? Television?
Well, corporate
production?
Like, no, they do production of conferences, not just like conferences where a man stands in front of the employees and tells them things, but like really elaborate conferences where people have to dress up and they watch films that have been made specially for the conference and that kind of thing, and they're taken.
You would organize all of that?
Yeah, I'd like to.
Why don't you want to be an actress? Or is that something which
because
you just...
Because of the money.
The money?
Yeah.
So you are... You have a practical side to you.
Oh, yeah. I spend a lot of money. So I know that one day I'm going to have to make a lot of money.
Why not just marry a rich man and then act?
Because it's not the same. It's much better spending your own money than spending someone else's. You get so much more satisfaction if you've made it yourself. And then what if he divorces me anyway?
I don't know whether the... How high are the divorce rates in England?
I think it's 1 in 3.
It's about 1 in 2 in this country.
That's what I heard.
So that means that as a woman, you must have a profession, because the chances are if you get married, you're going to get divorced and have to work anyway.
Oh, but plus, even if I was married, I couldn't stand being a housewife. Oh, I'd be so bored.
Is this something new, this attitude that women have, that they want to have families, they want to work, they want to have it all? Did they want to have it all a generation ago?
No, I suppose not, but then they didn't know that they could. Do you know what I mean? Like, for instance, with my mother. Mind you, she did work and have a family, but...
How about your grandmother?
Oh, she's never worked in her life. But I don't know. But a lot of women still. I have a lot of friends who'd just be so content to be housewives.
So do you consider yourself in the minority in that sense?
No, I'd say it's probably 50. I'd say with women now, if I took a chunk of my friends, I mean, and asked them, it would be 50-50 who would be content to just settle down, get married and have a family, and who would want a job.
So you really see yourself more as an organizer than you do as a creative talent? That's a question. The creative,
I like
being
to organize.
The writer, the actress, the somebody who would...
You know, I'd love to be an actress. One, I wouldn't like to be famous. Well, I would and I wouldn't. because I'd hate not to be able to do whatever I wanted. I'd hate to have people, you know, like coming up to me and asking me for my autograph or something. To me, there'd be nothing worse than that. I want the rich part, but I don't want the famous part. But I'd love to act because I really get a kick out of it. But you have to go for so many years earning nothing and waitressing. And I mean, half the people that you ask, more than half, 75% of people that will tell you that they're actors or actresses, I bet, are waiters and waitresses as well.
So you've looked at the downside of acting and have rejected acting because of that. It's
also,
not practical.
I would like to be, I don't know, there's something that I like about kind of a 9-to-5, because it's like I'm a really disorganized person, and having a 9-to-5 job would keep me kind of, you know, I need something to plan
so
around.
What you're saying to me is that you need to work within a structure which partially defines what you do. You need someone to say, move that rock from A to B by 10 o'clock.
Oh, no.
I'm reducing it to its most gross term.
No, I don't like being told what to do, but I like to know myself that I'm going to be in a certain place at a certain time doing something. But it's not like I can't motivate myself to do it.
But once you work within a structure, you'll be stuck with the problem of always having people telling you what to do, particularly in a particularly anything involving production, because there you have very specific deadlines to meet. You have directors who say this, 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 and this, and this, and I want you to take charge of all those things and have these four things ready by 10:30 tomorrow. That's part of production at any level.
What? And you're then, are you trying to say that if once you've been under strict direction like that, you'd find it difficult to work on your own or to give yourself deadlines?
You're saying that you're the kind of person who likes to create your own goals.
Yeah.
But that you need some kind of a framework to work within, like a 9-to-5 framework, which suggests to me working for a company of some kind. And I'm saying there, not necessarily, but there can be a built-in contradiction there. You're never really, you're not your own boss unless you pursue something independently in the same way that a painter goes to a studio. That's the extreme example. He creates his own, or she creates her own world. Once you go on board with a corporation or something, though, then you are, by definition, allowing a portion of your goals to be defined.
Oh, yeah, but obviously I think everyone has to start by working for somebody. But then, eventually, I'd like to do my own thing.
But there's a freedom that you get as an actress or an actor, which you would not get within an organization.
Yeah, I don't know. I just, because I always used to want to be an actress, and I can't understand even myself, really, why suddenly I don't.
What the hell? You're 19. Why should you know?
Yeah, exactly.
Some people don't figure out what they want to do. Some people never figure it out. Some people don't figure it out until after they're 30. Why should you know at 19? And so that leads to my next question. What sort of pressure do you feel to plot a specific direction to your life? Or will you feel comfortable exploring a lot of different things over the next 10 years? You're 19, and 10 years you'll be 29. Can you put aside that block of time as time in which you can explore? Or are you so single-minded that you will feel uncomfortable unless you're on the, quote, right track by the age of 22?
I could.
Do you understand what I mean?
Yeah. But I wouldn't say to myself, I'm not the kind of person that would say to myself, well, I'll put aside the next 10 years and do a bunch of stuff and then see how I feel. I would start one thing convinced that that was what I wanted to do. Then after a year, I'd probably not like it anymore. Do another convinced that I would do this for the rest of my life. After a year, I wouldn't like that anymore. Do you know what I mean? I'm not a forward planner. I get like this is what I want to do, definitely. And people tell me, well, think about it, Jason. I'm like, no, I know, don't try and tell me what I think. but then I realized that they were right.
So you're stubborn.
Yeah. But then if I wasn't convinced that I wanted to do it, maybe I would never do it, and so I wouldn't try it.
Sounds like a reasonable approach.
I mean, I'm not, like, I want to, like, I really want to achieve something career-wise. You know, I don't just want to be a secretary or something like that, but...
Is that primary? If you listed all of your goals in a general way, would that be way up near the top to achieve something career-wise?
Yeah, yeah.
And where does that come from? Your father, your mother? Where did you pick up this idea? Why not settle as the other 50% of your friends who say, oh, let me find a reasonably happy marriage and I'll be glad to serve tea every day at 4. What is this? Are you on some kind of an ego trip? Why do you want to achieve something?
Well, I just, the thought of being married and looking after babies, just thinking about it bores me. I mean, I would like to get married and I would love to have children, but I could never, for one, couldn't look after them myself. I just wouldn't have the patience.
They would then why have them?
Because I love children, but I'd love to have a job as well. And you can't do both, so I'd get someone to look after my children for me.
That's something within the English tradition which I have not been clear about, that this concept among the upper classes of you have children and the first thing you do is send them off to school and never see them again. I know it doesn't happen this way, but I'm just trying to make a point.
Yeah.
It's almost as if part of the standard, if you're upper class, is to have children, and included within that standard is that they be sent away to school at an early age. Because you, as a mother or father, really can't raise them as well alone. That it's almost, by age X, they must be out of the house, otherwise they cannot grow up in a healthy way. Which seems to me to be rather English in approach.
I think
is that right?
Really, yeah. Well, it stems from the public school system. Public meaning... Not
private.
What public means here, but public meaning the best of the private schools, you know, the most prestigious schools
Eton.
In the country. Eton, Harrow, Winchester, Rugby, whatever. And your children, if you were sort of upper class, especially in the old days, you had to send your children to one of these schools. And in order to go to one of these, they must go to prep school. And I don't know, it's just that boarding school was always thought to make a man of your sons. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. But you say that you would like to have children, and yet you're also saying you really don't want to raise them. Or you want to do both.
I want to be a part of raising them, but I couldn't handle all the dirty nappies and the crying and all the food being thrown around the room and things like that.
So you want a nanny to take care
of
them?
Yeah.
Do you
think that wrong?
I won't judge because... how can I make a judgment like
but
that?
I
mean, in a way... Something strikes me strange there because it's like my saying, I want only the best part of a certain world and I'm not willing to tolerate the bad part of it. Any experience involves a balance of good and bad. But you're saying, what you're really saying is, I want to be a parent but only want to enjoy the positive.
But it's not so much that, it's just that, I mean, I'm sure, I don't know, but I'm sure that a newborn baby is not easy. And it's, I mean, you can look at it from the other way in that I would just have someone to help me with it.
So you'd be willing to change the diapers Monday, Wednesdays and Fridays? Or maybe just Tuesdays and Thursdays?
I'd be willing to change the cleaner ones.
Okay. So these dreams that you had, getting back to... jumping away from motherhood for a second. These dreams that you had early of wanting to be an actress or a pop star or something, you soon, at some point, you realized these were didn't have a practical side to it. This was pure fantasy, which had no foundation, and therefore it was wise to consider another direction. And you're actually doing that now by talking about production.
Yeah, and also...
Is that right? I'm just trying to...
In the days when I wanted to be an actress, it was in the days when you didn't think seriously about your career. It's just when people said, what do you want to be when you grow up? And I'd say an actress, you know? Now I have to think about it. It's just now it... And I don't know why, because I do love acting so much. I suppose it's, in a way, the way in which all my friends are and especially with all this new sort of yuppie thing and everyone wants the most money and everyone, you know, and in London it's kind of, you get the good job and then you become a member of the right clubs and then you get your right car and all my friends are like that. So maybe in a way I just feel that I wouldn't fit in anymore if I became an actress. People would kind of go, right.
So you want to run with the yuppie crowd for a while. Are the English getting like the Americans in this sense? One of the basic criticisms of today's generation is that it's the me generation. Young people are looking for instant gratification.
Yeah.
Now they want an immediate return on anything.
Oh, that's and the same in England.
More money, more prestige, bigger cars, and there's no real concern with the overriding moral questions of the day. No one cares about the third world countries. No one cares about
the long term.
The impoverished who are living on the south side of London. Is it the south side or is it the east side? I don't know. Whichever side it is.
Yeah.
You become like an island, very insular. Is this a characteristic of being 19 in any generation, or is there a little bit more of that in today's generation? Do you have any perspective on that at all?
I think... Well, since I've come out here, I think I've gotten worse thinking in that way because everybody thinks that way here.
You've run into no idealists?
But it's just like, to me, that is... I mean, money is not my main aim. Continuing to live the life that I lead is my main aim. And I know that I'm going to need money to do that.
Well, the life that you've led has been one of a lot of crazy but wonderful adventures. You went to Spain for 6 months, no money, you didn't make much money. You're over here at Michigan State, and I'm sure you're not living in the local hotel, you're living in the residence hall. So you're trying a lot of different things. The things that you've been doing, the lifestyle you've been leading up to now, has been one of adventure. Testing different things.
That's how I want it to stay.
Yeah, but to become a yuppie, to work for the, quote, corporation, is a denial of that. That you become restricted to a certain class. You have to be at work at 9 o'clock. You have to wear certain clothes. You can't go to work as a barrister with a Michigan State sweatshirt. You know what I'm saying.
But, yeah, but I don't know, just being... brought up the way I was, going to the school I went to and having the friends that I have now in England, I'm already restricted to that. Do you understand what I mean?
Why are you restricted, though?
Because it's what you do.
You're telling me that you're locked into a class mentality.
Yeah.
And you see no way of breaking away from that.
Oh, I could do if I wanted to, but I like it.
But there's a wild side of you, too. Which goes completely against the grain.
But there's a wild side to all my friends. Just
no, 50% of them would be satisfied settling down and having nice, comfortable marriages and not running off to Spain, not being thrown out of school, not latching onto some guy who's a drug addict. I know he's not a drug addict. I'm just being flipped to make a point.
But, yeah, But there's a wild side to a lot of my friends. To me, what you're trying to say is if I get a 9-to-5 job, there's no way that I can continue leading any kind of crazy lifestyle. But I don't agree with that at all.
You're going to be crazy no matter what lifestyle you pursue.
No, I'm not going to be crazy, but...
No, I don't.
But...
I know what you're saying.
Yeah. I don't see why a 9-to-5 job should confine my evenings or my weekends or my holidays.
Not for a while, but will it be like other jobs you've had, which were comfortable for 6 months or so, and then you got tired and wanted to move on and try something else?
Could be. I mean, I'd love to work for a while after I graduate and then go to Australia for a year. I'd love to do that.
What's that have to do with the yuppie mentality?
Well, because I'd have to get a good job in order to get the money to go there.
But that's different than staying in the town that you grew up in, or just staying in England. That's a big leap. You're leaving your home country. You're willing.
Maybe we're defining yuppies differently.
Well, maybe you're an international yuppie with, with many international aspirations. You want the good life, but you want the variety of being able to travel and do things and change jobs.
Yeah. And
is that right?
I do get very bored being in the same place. That's why I was so pleased to come here, because like I have a 4-year degree. Next year I have to study in France for the whole year because I do French. So I'm going to go to Paris for a year. Then like it was so good that I was coming here for this one term, because 2 years in one place, it was a long time for me. I think I'd have been bored.
The yuppie, the negative definition of a yuppie that I understand, is a person who locks himself into a corporate type of existence, who wears all the right clothes, who has to continue working hard at that high-paying job so he can make the payments on his BMW and his lovely home, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. He becomes locked into a material way of life. And he has the family and the 2.7 kids, whatever,
yeah,
and the dog, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Your lifestyle
is
not the same.
It is. Our definition of a yuppie is different, definitely. Yeah. Because in England, yuppie came in as meaning what you're describing. But it's now, because of the class structure, has anyone who's middle upper class is now called a yuppie. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, and it's quite a common thing to do, in fact, is say to work for a year and then go away for a while and do this and do that. And yuppies in England are dead against settling down.
Well, that's very appealing to me and to you,
mm-hmm,
obviously.
Definitely.
Well, we're covering a lot of topics here. Let's jump to a few of your impressions of what it's meant to be here, your reaction to being at Michigan State, your reaction to the kids. Do they all seem basically immature, or do they...
The girls do. Mm-hmm. They look young. And they... I think it's got a lot to do with, like, the fact that American children are sort of given their privileges, like drinking and stuff, later on in life. I don't know, but definitely. And because they seem to leave home later. Most of the people that I've talked to here left home when they went to Michigan State, and that was their first time. Whereas it's much more common in England to leave home earlier, to take a year out before you go to university.
When you went to the all-girls school, were you living away from home?
No, at home.
But go on.
The girls definitely seem younger, and the boys do too, but it's weird because, for a start, I don't like living in dorms. I never have done, and I've hardly lived in the dorm during the time I've been here. I stay with friends the whole time. Some friends of mine have a house.
You're talking about the immaturity of women, young women here, and the apparent fact that this is due to the fact that they leave home later.
But that makes it sound really bad, as if I'm sort of slagging off all American women. I'm not at all. I've met some really, really nice people here. But I've met some freshmen on the corridor where I am supposed to live in McDonald. And I literally thought when I met them that they were about 15 years old. I thought they were someone's little sister, you know, and I just couldn't believe how young they looked and how young they seem, and they kind of, it's like their idea of fun of a good evening is sort of bringing popcorn up and watching TV and listening to music or something. Do you know what I mean? And it's like for them, and when I think back to it, the first time I left home, like when I first went to boarding school, that would have been a thrill for me. So that's why I say that. Do you know what I mean? It's just the fact that you're in your own room and there's no parents around. But I don't know.
How about the... Now, what courses have you taken here? I know you've taken Joyce's class.
Yeah, and I did one French class too. A grammar class.
How about the standard there? Low, high?
Very low. Very. But...
Is this a beginning class?
No, it's not. It's a... Oh, I can't remember what number it was. But I've learned since I started doing that course that, in fact, students can come here and study French without having any prior knowledge of French. So even if I'd done the top class, I've learned French since I was 9 years old.
You've what?
Learned French since I was nine. Mm. So if I had I done the top class, it would have seemed...
easy.
Yeah, yeah.
So you were bored?
Very. I hardly went to any of them.
Why didn't you change to another class? Didn't you, after the second or third session, say, look, this is not, I'm not getting anywhere, can you place me in a new class?
Because we had a lot of problems with the French department when we first got here, because we were supposed to be on various courses that they weren't doing in the end, and blah, 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 blah. We went to see this guy, and we were all told in England that we must take a French oral class. So we went to see this guy, and we said, we've all put our names down for the French oral class ages ago, like last term in England, before we broke up for the summer. You can't do that class, it's full. It was so unhelpful, so abrupt, so unwilling. So by the time we got into this French class, we just thought, right, we've actually got one class. There was three of us. We thought, you know, let's just stick with it.
So what did you take besides French and acting?
Nothing.
You've had an easy time.
I know.
Yeah?
I know.
What have you done with all your free time?
I started working out, which is something that nobody does in England.
Pumping iron?
Yep. But that was a bit of a 9-day wonder.
Tell me about that experience. That intrigues me.
Well, the first time we went, I went with three other English girls and this one American girl who's my sweet mate. And she was running around the track and on the bikes and everything. And the four of us were kind of lying on the mats by the fan, just absolutely crashed out. It was so funny. And she couldn't believe what we were like. And we couldn't believe what everyone else was like. It was really amusing. And then since then, I've been back a few times. And I got quite into it. But then when the cold weather started coming on and everything, I don't know, what have I done? What do most people who are at college do? It sounds awful, because if I tell you what I've done, you'll think, oh, she's adventurous. But like I said to you before, I kind of have, like, slipped into living here rather than being, like, a guest here. So I've sat around the house and watched movies and been out to the bar with my friends and slept in late in the mornings and that kind of thing.
Goofing off academically.
Yeah.
And not feeling guilty about it.
No. Well, I know, but I knew from the beginning that basically this was a term off for me, and I know that I'm going to have to catch up on the whole term when I get back, so I'm prepared for that. And it's not like it's going to be a shock when I get back.
But you stopped working 3 weeks before your O's.
No, I've done... Obviously, I've had written my essays.
I'm just joking. Would you conclude then that in an academic sense, you're not self-motivated?
Definitely not. Definitely not.
You need someone to crack the whip.
Yeah, and I always feel that I'm learning a lot more from working. Say, from the job I do in the holidays. I feel like I learn from that because I'm doing something. I'm doing something that really seems to me to be worthwhile, whereas drama... Well, drama's not academic anyway, really. I mean, writing a drama essay is, and I hate writing drama essays. Although, it's not like once I start it, I enjoy writing it. I can really get into it. But it's starting it that's my big problem. Especially with exams as well.
Do you have a talent for writing?
No. No.
Well, what are your talents?
I'd like to think that I can act. I don't know. I've never been like a person with that anyone would say, "Oh, she's so good at this," or "She's so good at that."
Do you have a technical side? Were you halfway decent in physics and math in school?
Oh, I was okay, but I hated it. I'm definitely an arts person, not a sciencey person. You see, I like to learn something if I can apply it to something, but I could never see why I had to learn to do calculus and algebra and things like that.
Well, you said you enjoyed working in London in the sales department of the, and that was a practical experience.
Yeah.
Going to Spain was a practical experience.
Yeah.
You had to adapt to a certain situation. Coming here was another challenge of adapting, although it wasn't challenging academically. So.
I'm definitely a practical person. I like doing. I don't like reading about things or seeing things. I like doing things.
So have you met some interesting people here?
Yeah, a lot of people. But
what?
Well, I think I have met a lot of people, but I've spent nearly all my time here with this one guy. So it's like... All the people I've met are his friends. Do you know what I mean?
An American?
Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah, I've met a lot of people, but not... I don't know how many out of those
Does he have it together, or is he a... he's not a copy of the guy you left in
England? Oh, no, he has it together. Yeah. No, definitely.
So it's going to be hard to go back?
Very, very hard. I might even not go back.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah. Somebody you met in one of your acting classes?
No, he was a good friend, an old friend of my sweetmate, and I met him through her.
Oh. No wonder you haven't been doing too much work. Academically. Well, it's nice that... I spent a year in Sweden, and one of the agonizing things about being there was that I knew that I was going to leave in a year, and I couldn't really get that serious with anyone, although I wanted to, and I did. I got very serious with a couple of young women, and it was so painful having to leave.
Yeah.
It's just awful.
I know.
So I really sympathize with you.
I don't know what I'm going to do.
Take him back.
He has to graduate first.
Yeah. Oh, well, out some of the... are there any basic differences in relating to Americans as opposed to Englishmen? I mean, any problems of communication, for example? Misunderstandings with respect to language or customs? Social etiquette that may be a little bit... Do you know what I'm asking?
Yeah. Not really, no, because... Obviously, there's certain words that you say that we don't say, and certain words that mean different things. But, like, sort of etiquette really is etiquette wherever you are. I mean, there are
different
like
conceptions of the role of the male versus the female varies tremendously from one society to the next, and what the woman's.
But also, I found from one individual to the next. I think with something, I don't think that something like that, although obviously you're very influenced by the society you live in, but in the end, the way you feel about, say, the role of the woman and the role of the man is individual.
Of course, in Spain, it was one general attitude. In England, there's another.
Yeah.
And it also depended upon class as well.
Right, right.
Well, if... I'm trying to sum up my reaction to what you've told me. It seems to me that you've had a good time here, that academically it wasn't challenging at all because you were stuck in a French class which was far beneath your level, and the acting class...
The drama was challenging.
That was interesting.
But not academically.
But not on an academic level. So you've had a lot of free time, and you've had a good time. You've talked to a lot of people, met a lot of people, found a boyfriend, and now you have to go back. That's sad. Anyway, I'm going to give you, as I told Jacinta, a transcript of
yeah.
this. Maybe I can even do it before you leave. And you'll pick it up and you'll read it in 10 years, maybe. Either that or you will have thrown it in the fireplace or you're using it.
No, but it will be a great... I mean, for everyone it will be interesting to have, but for Jacinta and I particularly, because it's been such an experience, you know. Especially the photos as well will be nice to have.
But what do you think you would like to read in that? Do you think that you'll be able to look back and detect a thread that will have carried through those 10 years? What's the core of Josie that will remain after 10 years and after 10 years? Or can you even look back from now, 10 years in the past, and can you see a core of a personality which was then and which is now and which will remain 10 years from now? And if so, how would you sum that up?
Well, I'm a very sort of spur-of-the-moment person. Like I said to you, I get bored of things easy. And like, I mean, my main... This sounds like really shallow, but I don't mean it to sound like that at all. But like, I mean, I see it as you get one life and make the most of it. So really my main aim in life is to be happy and to have a really good time. Which doesn't mean I just want to, like, go out and get wasted every night, but I want to really achieve something as well, you know. I mean, that comes into it. But I think that I'm always going to be sort of... changing my attitudes and wanting to travel. And I mean, I'm restless. But then I suppose really as well that my heart lies at home, but I love getting away for a while. I mean, God knows how I'll turn out. I don't know.
You won't end up in jail.
Oh, no.
Will you?
No. I mean, I know what.
So you have a certain.
I know what to experiment with and not what and yeah. what not to experiment.
You know where to draw the line to avoid extreme trouble.
Yeah.
You're not going to end up destroying yourself.
No.
That's good. But is there a little bit of a? It's almost as if you are seeking experiences on those experiences which will only give you a pleasure. I know you will say that there's any set of experiences will inevitably involve some pain, but it's a question of emphasis too. Your ability to tolerate pain in order to achieve a goal, is that not particularly high? It's almost as if you're skittering along and you see something which is a little bit more appealing and you hop over there and then that's the way you're going.
Yeah.
I mean, I could interpret your remarks in that way. Couldn't I?
Yeah. I'm still not sure what you're getting at.
I'm just talking on a general philosophic level, really. You're saying your goal in life is to be happy. And that will lead you to travel, to try different things, to do different things, as long as you're able.
Yeah.
You'll do everything to avoid getting into a rut.
But then maybe one day I'd be happy in a rut.
Do you see many people?
Well, you see, I would probably say that what I would class as a rut is probably not really a rut, because to me, being in the same country for more than 2 years is a bore. Do you know what I mean? So,
do you see your parents in a rut?
I used to, and then I came to realize that they're so happy with their rut, so what the hell?
A rut isn't a rut if you don't think it is.
Right. I mean, everyone has their own level of living, and nobody's is wrong. You know? Although my parents think mine is. But
do they see you as shiftless and a little bit irresponsible and unwilling to commit yourself? And are they sane in the evenings when you're away? God, I wonder if Josie will ever settle down.
I think they think that I've got my head screwed on, but certainly more than they used to think. And I know they're happy just that I'm at college. That's a relief to them. But they've never asked me what I'm going to do eventually yet. Because I think that they realize that really I'd be like, well, I'd like to do this, I'd like to try that, maybe I'll do this. And I think that they know now that that's the answer they'd get. But I think they think I have my head screwed on. They just think I'm a bit... They think I go over the top, you know. They say, why can't you do things in moderation?
Do you have brothers and sisters?
One sister.
Older or younger?
She's 22 today.
And what has she done with her life?
She left school when she was 16. She always, from the very beginning, wanted to be a nanny. She taught for a while in the prep school where we used to both go to. She then went to... Have you heard of Norland nannies? They're like...
What did she teach?
Oh, just like... Just not teaching as in any subject, just looking after the kindergarten. And then she went to Norland Nursery Training College, which is like the prestigious nanny college where the royal family, etc., get their nannies from. And she went there for 3 years, and now she's a nanny, and she works for the editor of a national newspaper, and she has a fantastic life. She's out of the country for at least 1 week in every month, either on holiday or with the family. She's lives in a beautiful house in London, meets fantastically interesting people, and she's so happy.
Is that an occupation you can continue with if you settle down?
No. But then my sister, I'm sure, will not work when she gets married.
Very different from
you. Yeah.
Isn't she?
Yes, she is. She's a...
So how do you explain that? You both had the same parents.
We were always, always so different. She hated school. I loved school. She never had... I can't say she never had friends. She was so shy. She had, like, one friend. And until recently, she never went out or anything, you know. Now she's got this one boyfriend and she's really come out of her shell. But
she attracted?
Very, very. But we were always so different. And until she was about 18, she really hated me because I did well in school, she didn't. I had all the friends and she didn't. You know, it was
she's
like,
not as gifted academically as you were? She's not as good a student?
No. She's thick. But she's a great person. Now we get on so well. We really do. But we're still different. She's a terrific snob. She has to be seen in the right places at the right time with the right people wearing the right clothes. And
you're content to hang out in your Michigan State sweatshirt.
It's the kind of thing where if I go out with her, I'll turn up and she'll go, Josie, what are you wearing? You know, she's like that. But she's great. I mean, she makes me laugh.
You know, actually what I try doing is simply, aside from asking questions about your hopes and dreams, I just enjoy getting someone talking about something that they like to talk about, that they feel, a subject they feel articulate with. And it's different with every person. I really think that every person has that there's a struggle going on when you're 19 or 20 between a rational side and a fantasy-filled creative side. The rational side is saying, don't do this because in the long run it doesn't make much sense in terms of earning money. And the creative side is pushing you in the same way that it did when you were a little girl, when it said, I want to be an actress.
Yeah.
I don't care. I just want to be this, that, or the other thing. And I'm willing to pay any price. And it's hard to weigh those two, that tug between the rational side and the fantasy.
Yeah, it's even like with me, some days I feel differently. Like one day I'll be, you know, say I've just been to drama with Joyce or something, and you come out with this real sort of feeling, and I'm like, oh, I want to be an actress. Then I'll wake up the next morning and I'll be like, you know, I'm broke, I can't wait to get out of college and start making money. It just depends.
Do you think that's typical? Is that kind of feeling? Is that something you've encountered in some of the people that you've talked with here? And your boyfriend, for example? Now, he's switched major 4 or 5 times, right? Engineering, law, whatever.
Yeah, but he knows what he wants to do, I think, now.
Sure?
He's very, very money motivated. I mean, I don't... No, he would mind what he did, but... as long as he makes money, you know. But I think it probably is, even though I think most people wouldn't admit it, because I think a lot of people like to think that they know what they're going to do. But really, when you're 19, unless you can predict the future, how can you say? I mean... I know what I'd like to do, but something awful could happen tomorrow and I'd never be able to do it.
Did you ever think that maybe the type of choice that you have and that I had is really only a product of the 20th century? That people never had these choices 100 years ago? What choice did your grandmother have? Or her father? My grandparents, great-grandparents came from Scotland. What could you do in Scotland? You could herd
sheep. Well, women didn't work full stop.
Yeah.
If I were born 100 years ago, I'd probably now have a child and a husband and... Yeah, I mean...
You would be in a rut already, wouldn't you?
Yeah. God, as far as I can see, women 100 years ago were in a rut from the day they're born.
Well, most of the men, too, if you were working in...
I suppose so.
In a coal mining region of England.
Then you became a coal miner.
You had no choice.
Yeah.
You worked 16 hours, came home and dropped from exhaustion and hope your wife had a bowl of stew for you.
Yeah. Yeah, oh... I mean, my parents say to me that from their generation to mine, you know, they're like, you're so lucky to be able to go to America with as part of your university course. They're like, we couldn't do that, you know? And even my mother, I mean, she's a teacher, and I think probably... particularly an infant teacher, which is what she's trained for. It's kind of a typical female job, isn't it? So even in her day, I'm sure there's no way she'd ever have thought of sort of going into a business or anything.
You could be a teacher, a secretary, a waitress, or maybe a social worker. What else did women do? They had no other choices.
Exactly.
Now they can do anything.
Almost anything.
It's a lot easier.
Yeah.
But
I still wouldn't like to try being an engineer or something, though.
Yeah. You're talking about the prejudice you would encounter?
Mm. But then I am totally anti-feminism anyway.
You're against the feminist movement?
Oh, totally.
Why? You believe that you should get equal pay for equal work, don't you?
Yeah.
That was a feminist, part of the feminist movement.
Yeah, but they go over the top, I think. I mean, women who, for instance, shouted a man for opening the door for her or something. You know, I mean, if I get married, even if I have a job as well, I would expect my husband to expect me to have a meal ready for him when he got home from work or whatever.
Even if you worked?
Yeah.
Aren't you doing double duty?
Yeah, but I...
Why should you do more of the work proportionally than he? Well, now we're into an interesting topic.
Why I don't...
That's the big complaint of women, that they have their career, they come home, and the husband is insisting that they still cook the meal. Is that justified?
Well, yes. And don't ask me why, because I couldn't tell you. It's just, that's what I think.
You have just put in on your production crew, 12 hours, you're fit to be tied. You come home.
Well, then
your husband has been home for 2 hours. He has a comfortable 9-to-5 job. And
well,
he says, dear.
Those are extreme circumstances.
Dear, when's supper going to be ready? Are you going to tell me you're not going to go through the ceiling? That's
but
not
I still
extreme.
Wouldn't
That's typical.
I'd expect him to cook. I'd expect him. To take me out for a meal or something. I wouldn't expect him to cook.
How about taking care of the kids? You can't afford a nanny yet. But he's still working his way up, and you're making very large payments on the house, and you can't quite afford the nanny.
Then I couldn't work, so I wouldn't be working, so I would make his meal.
You're giving me a rough time. But truly speaking, isn't it pretty easy to think of a set of circumstances where more would be demanded of you simply because you were a woman, and that would be unjustified?
Yes, but then, I mean, look at it from the way I see it. Say I didn't have a job and I was a housewife and I did everything. Why should he expect me to do that? Yes, but why should I expect him to give me half of what he earns or whatever? And that's always been seen as the man's duty. Why should I expect that? I mean, the way I see it, men have a rougher time. We have a choice. We can work or we can get married. We don't have to work. A man is committed to work from the day he leaves college until he retires.
In theory, I can say that maybe you have more choice. But in practice, do you really? Because the reality is that the divorce rates are so high that you are almost obliged to get a profession. Because if you don't have a profession, the chances of being stuck with kids and no support is very high. In other words, you have to find a vocation to survive, don't you? Isn't that the reality of living in the 20th century?
Possibly, yeah, but then if I was getting married, I wouldn't go into it thinking that. Do you know what I mean? That wouldn't occur to me.
Well, what would be going through your mind? That I'm only getting married because this marriage was made in heaven and it will last and forever and ever? Everyone wants that. Everyone dreams about that. But wouldn't the practical side of you ask, come on
now?
Yeah,
but then I wouldn't be standing at the altar thinking, well, here I am getting married, but God, I have to get a career because this isn't going to last forever. I mean...
No, you wouldn't ask that question at the altar, but you might ask it...
A couple of days later. No, I don't.
You might ask it at the outset of when you're 19 and you are considering the relative merits of continuing your education. You might ask that question.